Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's, home of the $5 Biggie Bag. Coach Dave McGinnis in studio, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plan.
So Delaney Walker made some comments yesterday. We got Keith Bullock actually coming in studio, coming up at 1 o'clock today to talk about this as well. But I wanted to ask you about this, Coach. He talked about coming in the league in 2006 and how things have changed from the start of his career to now with guys in a locker room, and about how they respond to being confronted over negative things. And he said something along the lines of, they either want to fight or they want to get traded. You can't just get in someone's face and say, let's go and this is what we need to do, without something negative happening in today's NFL. And that's how football culture has changed. What do you think about those comments from Delaney?
Well, I mean, first of all, Delaney Walker, to me, has earned the right to make those kind of comments, because Delaney Walker backs up everything he does on the field. Everything that he says, I mean, the credibility that you have when you're going to say something in the National Football League off the field is all contingent upon what you do when you're on the field. And he's produced enough that and I'll say this, the league's changed since I got into it in 1986. I mean, it was different then too. You didn't have any free agency back then. So, I mean, but still, the fact of, we're talking about, getting in somebody's face, the first thing you have to do before you have the credibility to get in somebody's face is you have to have credibility with your production on the field. And then the way you take it, I think, is dependent upon who it's directed at. But I think Delaney Walker has earned the right to say whatever he wants to. And I don't think he's saying anything malicious. I just think he's making an observation.
Because you've coached for so long and you played and you've been around different eras of players, do you buy into the notion that while there are guys playing today, and certainly guys for the Titans, that are probably just like the guys you coach with the Bears or coach in your career mentality-wise, do you buy that as a whole the culture has shifted to the direction Delaney Walker saying, where a majority of the guys just aren't like that anymore?
Well, I think our society's changed.
Right.
I mean, our culture is different. I mean, when I first got into the league, there was no social media. There was no, everybody wasn't their own brand. You didn't have, everybody wasn't on Buckshot or InstaShoot or whatever all that stuff is that you have. I mean, it's different. This is, society's different. The way guys, approach things is different. But still, the bottom line is you earn respect in the National Football League by how you prepare and how you play. And then if things aren't going right, and I don't think it's ever been, and I've been in some really, really, as you guys like to say, alpha locker rooms in my career, really alpha locker rooms. I rarely ever saw anybody, get in anybody's face. I saw people talk about, we as a group have to do better. This is complete, now. And again, I wouldn't read between the lines of anything Delaney said. If you really want to dig down to where he was coming from, I think you need to talk right to Delaney. So it to me, look,
I don't think he's talking about an issue specific to the Titans when he's saying that. I think he's just saying, as a whole, football players and locker rooms now have changed and are different.
Well, we were talking about this before we came in here, Chad. You and I were. I mean, I've never, when I first started in this league, I never, saw a preponderance of people to say, I don't like the way it's going here. I'm going to just go home and I'm not going to play till I get to play someplace else. I have, That hasn't happened.
Right.
I mean, it looks like it's starting to rear its head a little bit.
Lose 56-0 if you're the Dolphins in week one and everyone demands a trade.
Everyone demands a trade. And what I was talking to you about in there was, if you want to talk about the difference, you know, the difference now, there's a lot of difference. You know, there's free agency, which makes a big difference. Your locker room is changing about 30% every year. So to develop a culture in a locker room, I mean, it's a lot harder than it was back when you had stability. You can see the teams that win year after year after year, New England, where the stability has been magnificent. So they've got a culture established there, and they're not going to bring anybody in there that they don't think will fit into what they do. And if they have somebody they think might help them football wise, and they bring them in there, and they don't fit into what they're doing, well, they eliminate that problem. They just say, okay, you know, you're not going to be here. And so it is different. It's a lot different because the league has changed. I agree with him there. The league has changed a lot.
And I brought this up with Logan Ryan on Tuesday, and I'm sure Delaney would feel the same way, although I won't speak for him. But if he's frustrated over the start to the season, I can certainly understand it because I see similarities to what happened last year, just kind of mixed up in a different portion of the season where the Titans start out 3-1, a chance to really grab hold last year of everything they were doing, and they had back-to-back losses against Buffalo and Baltimore that left them continuing to claw. They also went to London and lost, although they played better than the previous two losses. My overall point, though, is they had three straight losses after a nice start, and it left them back at 500, and they would win some, lose some, and ultimately in December, they're fighting for a playoff spot, but it was for a wild card spot, and that's what it was. This year, they start 1-0. They're playing some backup QBs, overall solid teams with top to bottom with their 40 or so players that they're going to see on an average game, but winnable games and a chance not only to start 3-0, we know that, but a chance to send Jacksonville to 0-3 and a chance to get over the top of a team that has controlled you in the past in Indianapolis. And it's by the Titans' own undoing that it didn't happen. So if he's talking about a 1-2 start being frustrated and looking around and saying, we're going down that same path, I understand that completely.
Well, yeah, you're frustrated. Nobody wants to lose, and they didn't. Look, you don't right. You don't go into it. I mean, they're all winnable games. They're all winnable games in the National Football League, and that's the way you go into it. You know, you don't go into it. You know, and it doesn't matter. Basically, who you got to win the game, no matter how. If you win the game playing really good, if you win the game getting really lucky, or if you win the game because the other team you're playing that day plays really bad, it doesn't matter. You win the football game. You only get so many chances at this. And as you said, you can't look back and say, if we would have done this, you didn't do it. You had a chance to do it. You didn't do it. And that brings a lot of anger and frustration. I just done it for too long. I'm telling you. But the other thing that you have to do, you have to be able to mentally get past all that and go to the next one. Because you can let everybody else stew in the things that didn't happen. You can let everybody stew in that. You've got to fix it and go to the next one.
Mac, with the 10-day layoff after the short turnaround, how similar was this past weekend to a bye week where you self-assess and self-scout?
Good point, Jonathan. It's a mini bye week. And you saw what Mike Vrabel did with his team. You do this. Most coaches do this during a full bye week. Is you will bring them back and one, maybe two of the practices, depending on when your bye week comes, you'll just get back to a whole fundamental day. You'll get back to individual fundamental. You'll get back to unit fundamentals. You won't even go against one another. You will just go fundamentals. And plus, you will go through fundamental corrections of things that have not gone well for you in however many preceding games you have had. So it's like a mini bye. All right. The coaches didn't get much time off. All right. Because they're back right now immediately, because look, the people that a 1-2 start affects the most, and I understand the passion with fans, with people that are in the media, I understand all of that, because everybody, but the people it affects the most are the people that are in that building up there, and they're the only ones that can fix it. And that's what you do after a Thursday ball game, especially a Thursday ball game that you're not successful in. You've got to reset. You've got to reevaluate, and you have to reset. So it is like a mini bye.
How much can the reset of the officials, which happened this week in week three, especially with the holding calls, help reset the offensive line with some of the holding calls that have been determined by these officials?
Well, I mean,
we didn't see that in week three because the call happened. Well, maybe it happened at halftime with Brady's tweet. We don't know, but it didn't happen until after the Titans play.
I think it may.
You're rolling your eyes some.
This is not a visual medium. Yeah, it helps. I mean, it was just as a fan, and yeah. I don't care as a fan of what team, just as a football fan, that's unwatchable when they call it like that.
Do you think Brady's tweet had something to do with
I do.
The second half of the game?
I absolutely do. Not the second half of the game, but I think it had something to do with the
because well, calls went down in the second half of the Jags game.
Because I don't think the officials knew Brady's tweet. But here's the thing: I do think just it was so glaring. I mean, I've been in over 650 NFL games. Okay, I've seen a few. That was so as chopped up as I've ever seen it. It seemed like every other snap, you know. And look, when you've got a vested interest in a team, you clearly think, you know, the calls affect you more than anybody else, which it does. But at the same time, when you really start looking at it, I sat in the officials' meetings in training camp. I saw what they were calling. The thing they were the emphasis on the holding, Jonathan, was really for the backside blocks. When you run the outside veer away from it, when the tackle was coming down the second level and hooking people so the cutback could come in. They started calling everything. Theoretically, when you watch it, if you really grind a tape in the National Football League, you could call holding every snap somewhere along the line of scrimmage. You could do it because you start out with your hands. As you come off the ball, you start out because it's a hand fight game. You start out with your hands outside, and then whoever works their hands for the inside leverage, offensively or defensively, then you've got a chance to win that. Well, they were calling the initial hands outside the frame immediately. Those flags came out quick. They were coming out really quick. And so to me, I think it's going to make a difference. And I think it'll help the game. Now, flagrant holding calls, you do. All right. But I mean, it's the number of them. Look, when CJ2K was trying to get over, you know, break the record, if you remember up there in Seattle.
I do.
And Ed Hockey League called that on that power O, that they called that holding. You know, a late flag. I mean, I'll still never forget that, you know, and nobody else will either. And that was ridiculous. But that was one holding call and a whole bunch of these holding calls. And I'm not necessarily talking about just, I mean, where they go down 50 or 60% across the league.
Yes.
So that points out there was a problem.
Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis talk Tennessee and the SEC. Coach to Coach, Saturdays at 11 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's, home of the $5 biggie bag. For $5... you get the total package. That's what David Reed tells us. You get the bacon double stack, the four-piece nuggets, plus a small fry and drink. Price and participation may vary. Wendy's Kids Meals now just $1.99 after 4 p.m. as well at participating Wendy's for a limited time.
Let me break this down to a very Belichickian level and simplify things for the Titans team. Defense is doing their job. Offense not doing their job. That can become problematic in some locker rooms. I'm sure you've been around teams where one side of the ball is carrying their weight, the other side is not. The natural human inclination is to then get frustrated when you're losing football games because of that fact. How difficult is it to keep that together and make sure guys don't start snipping at each other when that's going on?
All right, I'll give you a very Belichickian answer.
I love it.
To your Belichickian breakdown. First of all, it is human nature, all right? That and I have been on those types of teams, you know, where the defense did carry the day most of the time. But what you do understand is
this is the way I feel every time Ryan Mudd produces our show. I start snipping at him because he's not doing his job and we are. So I understand this reaction.
Well, first of all,
I'm joking, Mudd.
I'm going to always defend Ryan A. Mudd.
That's right.
I mean, yeah. I've got money invested in him.
Oh, we do too.
small investment, but maybe the worst you've ever made.
Small investment, a huge return. Okay.
We've deemed Mudd our pledge, so we're invested too.
Okay, well, you guys are really two good fraternity brothers to have as a pledge. All right, here's the deal. I have been on those teams. And it does, their frustration does show up, but it's frustration over losing because you know that the people, whichever side of the ball is not performing as well, they're not trying to perform poorly. They are not trying to perform poorly. You want them to be able to be successful because that helps you be successful. Now, you talk about divisions in locker rooms. That is entirely on the culture and the type of people that you have in the locker room. You know, that is entirely on there. All of the teams that I've ever been on, those early Bear teams were like that. All right. I mean, the defense was absolutely dominant. There was never any split like that, even though you could see because if you've got people on one side of the ball or the other that aren't showing up for work, that aren't practicing, that aren't putting preparation, that aren't putting time in, that's a different story. Chad, it really is. But if you've got everybody that's on board and working and going at it, but are just not having the success that your side of the ball is, well, then what you try to do is you try to continue to keep your side of the ball up and hopeful that they catch up.
Dave McGinnis with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Let's take a look ahead to the Atlanta Falcons this Sunday.
Okay.
Right here on Titans Radio, you can hear the call, noon. Kickoff between the Falcons and Titans. Mike Keith and Dave McGinnis on the call with Titans Radio, 104.5 The Zone. Their receiving core is just, as far as a trio is concerned, you say they might be the best trio in the NFL.
I'd put them
how they're built.
I don't mean to interrupt you, Hutt, but I would put them right up there with any of them. And I'm going to say this, you know, and I will go on record as saying this: Julio Jones, the best receiver in the league. The best overall receiver in the National Football League. You look at the type of athlete that he is. Just take the football out of it. I remember vetting him, you know, when he came out. I mean, you're talking about a guy that was a 6'6 high jumper in high school. You know, a 24-plus broad jumper in high school. Ran 4.38 at the combine, 6'3", 220 pounds. That's got a catch radius like Spider-Man, that can make the combat catches, can turn a short one into an explosive, can run away from you. But you can take all of those attributes. The overriding attribute that I think sets him apart from a lot of receivers in this league, his competitive nature. I mean, his competitive nature is a lot like Hopkins. He is a vicious competitor. And even when he was at Alabama, the national championship year, that's before they were really throwing it around all over the field. And you could watch him in a lot of clips being one of the best physical blockers on the field of that national championship team. I love this player. I mean, just as a player, because I appreciate talent in the National Football League. But you pair him with Mohamed Sanu, who's a very underrated slot receiver, who's a very versatile, you know, football player. And then you put Ridley in there with him. And plus Hooper tight end. This is a good offensive team with the skill positions. I mean, it really is.
And while we're discussing Julio Jones, whenever we've talked, you mentioned Hopkins in Houston. Whenever we've talked about him, Logan has told us the thing that sets Hopkins apart from the rest of the group of receivers in the league is every single play. It doesn't matter if he's getting the ball or not, he's going to win the one-on-one battle. Even if he's blocking away from the ball on the far side of the field and there's a run to the near side, Hopkins is going to win the block one-on-one. Is Jones the same way?
Same way, and that's why I appreciate Logan Ryan. Logan Ryan is an ultimate professional. I mean, I've been around several of them in my career. I really respect Logan Ryan's game, and I respect his approach to the game. Because he looks at it professionally, and he's 100% right. And Julio Jones is the same way, is exactly the same way. And whether it's going good, it's going great, it's going bad, it's going terrible, you're going to get the same effort out of Julio Jones every single snap.
You mentioned scouting him from college at Alabama. They asked him to block a lot in college, right?
I'm sure they did. Well, yes, they did. I mean, I watched it. They weren't spinning it down the field like they're doing now. I mean, and he was still the sixth overall pick in the draft for a reason. This guy's a physical specimen, but his athletic competitive nature is really good.
So what has held them back to early portion of the season? Is it the up and down play at quarterback? And Is it Matt Ryan first half at Indy versus Matt Ryan second half at Indy is a great example of
there
that.
That's a great a dichotomy there of an example of Matt Ryan first half, Matt Ryan second half. And you could visibly see I watched the game live, on television, and then went back and watched the film. But you could see, there were some plays that, he was wildly inconsistent. And normally he is one of the better ball locators as a quarterback in this league. That's another thing that makes him dangerous, is he's got these guys that have physical ability and can get open and can win one-on-ones, but he's also a really great ball locator where they can catch it and really move with it, without breaking stride. But he was wildly inconsistent that first half. He really was. I mean, he had plays out there that he left on the field, but he reset. You talk about resetting and refixing. He reset it and refixed it at halftime, and then you saw the Matt Ryan that has taken him to a Super Bowl. You saw that guy. And plus, look, he's been a top-tier quarterback in this league for, 12 years now?
Yeah.
You know what you're getting there. And again, as I say, you're talking about the National Football League. You can have great players everywhere. It's still hard to win on Sunday or Monday or Thursday or whenever you play, and you've got to perform at that moment during that play and during that period of 3 hours and 15 minutes. They haven't done that to their optimum, clearly, for two ball games.
And if that offense is able to get the run game going with Devontae Freeman, then that enables the entire offense to begin to click. We're going to see the fullback game this week in Atlanta, 21 personnel, which is something we haven't seen so far this year.
Let's start with that. I mean, they've got a true fullback, and then the 21 personnel, they will run the true power O lead out of I formation, which pull on the backside guard. All of that play action stuff, I've coached linebackers for years in this league, and if you've got a true power O team that can still run the play action off of it, and the reason it's so hard, and it's going to be work for Jayon and Rashawn Evans, or Wesley Woodyard, who's ever behind the line of scrimmage at that second level. The power O does two things out of the two back set. First of all, the run and the play action look exactly right. The pull of the guard across the center, you have to jump gaps as a linebacker. You have to jump gaps. And if you don't fit a power O immediately, there's a crease in there because they're double swabbing the hole with the guard pulling and the fullback. So what I'm saying is, as a linebacker, if you don't trigger to get up in there quick, even if you do get the proper gap fit, there's still a crack. There's a crease there. That's why they run the play like they do. And so that's why it puts such pressure on your second level with that. If they can get that type of run game going and reduce those splits, then you can start working, whether you're in man or zone, you can start working the inside of the field off of that, or you can extend it down the field with the receivers they have with the deep comeback routes. So we haven't seen a whole lot of that play, all right, so far, because there's not a lot of 21 true personnel. People do it with a tight end in there, but sometimes you can tell with the move tight end when it's going to be run, when it's going to be passed, and we won't get into all the bird rabbit tails that you can get into with that type of thing, but it's going to be something different. They're going to have to play that.
Play fake Ryan Sanu. It's Hooper at the 5, and Austin Hooper, the touchdown for Atlanta. Snap to Ryan. Colts trying to get there. Matt throws. Caught. Touchdown, Austin Hooper. Ryan on the left side. The throw to the end zone, and it's caught. Falling out of the back of the end zone, Julio Jones between Wilson and Gethers, and that's why he's who he is.
Oh, my goodness. The Atlanta Falcons radio network there last week. In Indy, the Colts ultimately win 27-24, but it was 20-6?
Yeah,
and then Atlanta came back with two scoring drives in the second half.
Yeah, they were getting boat raced at halftime.
Defensively for Atlanta, Coach Mack with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. This is a defense with speed at linebacker. Up front, not as big as Jacksonville. Is it similar to the Colts defense?
It's similar to the Colts defense a little bit, just in personnel, body types, the way they are. They got Tack McKinley and they got Beasley on the outside. It's Dan Quinn's defense, okay? He's back to calling it this year because he knows it better than anybody else. He was not happy with the way that it was structured nor administered last year. He took it back over as the head coach, as a defensive signal caller. So the advantage to that is it's his defense. He knows how to adjust it at the moment with what's going on. He knows all of the counter punches to what people try to do on it. It's basically a five-man up look to begin with. The outside guys, Tack McKinley and Beasley, are good on the edge. They're good on the edge at setting the edge and being able to funnel things inside. Deion Jones is their fastest linebacker. Both of those linebackers were taken in the same draft, two rounds apart. But Deion Jones, you know, he was a 4.38 guy. I mean, he's a 4.4 guy that can move. I mean, he's built for that defense because a lot of stuff is spilled outside to those linebackers. And what they do down inside, Grady Jarrett is their most prolific player down inside. But what the Titans offense will have to be ready to do, you're going to see a lot of movement and a lot of games out of their inside people. And I'm talking about on conflict downs, first, second down, because they'll run two-man, three-man games. They will be run games that they'll run run games to clog lanes and then try to confuse protections to get to coverage if it's play action or even if it's straight up where they know they can come after you. They don't have the size as to what the Titans faced last week up front in Jacksonville, but they all are quick. And this defense, this defense, you know, that he runs is predicated on a lot of movement up front, a lot of being able to disguise what you're going to do, and then trying to create confusion with those two and three man games or four man games, two and two on each side. So you've got to be ready to block that and pick those things up.
Your mention of Jarrett reminded me to get to Nate Davis at guard. If we see him start, I don't see how you don't give him a shot to play after what we saw last week at right guard. Nonetheless, Jarrett's going to be testing whoever is lined up at right guard.
No, absolutely.
This Sunday. With that in mind, let's just mentioning Nate Davis here. Why is it more difficult, I'll let you explain, to get an offensive lineman ready without much training camp experience compared to what we saw with Rashawn Evans last year, where he also missed time with injury, and it did take him a while to get up to speed too, but there's more assignments and location for what Davis may be asked to do, right?
That's a relevant question, and here's the thing. When you have a player like Rashawn Evans that missed as much as he did, clearly a lot of things that he missed is being able to, you know, eye discipline and reads and keys behind the line of scrimmage, learning where he fit, but he had the requisite skills of a run and hit player. And he also had rush skills as a player that once you get healthy and he gets up to speed health-wise, you can put and utilize and put him on the field, and then you can work the rest of the defense around what he does until he gets caught up with the nuances of what his position is and what he's doing. All right? The offensive line is different. The offensive line, it has to be in conjunction with everything else that is going on. You know, and it has to be and things happen. Things happen very quickly in that center guard triangle. The closer you get to the ball, the quicker things happen to you. And so not only picking up games, but also being able to identify fronts as they shift and move fronts, also being able to identify protections, whether you're going 5-0, whether you're going 3-3, whether it's six-man, whether it's play action, all of those types of things you have to experience with the group you are working with and the people you are working beside to be able to get a feel for what that goes on. The only way you can do that, you can't do that unless you get live reps at it, and you've got to get live full speed reps at it. He missed all of the half speed reps. He missed a lot of those types of things on the field stuff. I'm sure he was in meetings. He was going through everything. He understands the basis of the offense, but just the physical actions that it takes inside, especially for a young, because I don't care where you come from in college football. Offensive line play in college football is completely different than it is in the National Football League. You know, it's completely different because a lot of times in college football, you never get in a three-point stance, okay? And if you do, it's not for long. You're always standing up looking over at a card on the sideline to seeing whether they got Mickey Mouse or Bart Simpson, you know, picture shown, and then that's what you're going to run. And basically, it's real quick RPO stuff. So it's different. I don't care where you come from, you know, in college football, with a few rare exceptions. And so anyway, I mean,
well,
but
I wanted to ask you about that piece of it, Coach.
Oh.
The quote unquote small school adjustment period for a guy. Does that exist, or when you draft a guy in the third round or the first round or the sixth round, whatever it is, you're expecting what you're expecting out of them, regardless of where they went to school or what level they played at?
Chad, great question. And you draft traits. You don't draft environment. You draft traits. And that's exactly
great
what
way
you
to
do.
Put it.
Well, I mean, because it's right. You know, I mean, that's what you do.
I've never heard it said that way, drafting traits and not environment, though, because there would be some people who would say, well, he missed time in camp, but also he played at Charlotte, and if he had played at Alabama, maybe he'd be more ready than he would.
If he didn't have the requisite traits to play in the National Football League as evaluated, it wouldn't have mattered where he played. He wouldn't be here. That's what you do.
We've got about 30 seconds left.
Is that all?
I want to hit two quick things. It's going to be difficult
in
for
30
you,
seconds?
Yeah. Right. They have to run the football well with Derrick Henry and the environment. You mentioned traits versus environment. The environment in Atlanta will be difficult to deal with.
Jonathan, because it's indoors. You know, it's an indoor place. You know, it's indoors. Things are always accentuated there indoors. And what happens indoors? You know, I coached a team in St. Louis, and we were still there at the Dome inside. You can take advantage of that defensively because the opponent's offense can't hear the count if the crowd's going. You can jump snap counts, all right? And at the same time, your communication as a visiting team in an indoor environment has to be exactly on point just because the noise is accentuated, and this will be the first indoor game this year.
You can see Dave McGinnis indoors at Buckhead Saloon Saturday night for the road rally in Atlanta. If you're going down to Atlanta, I've talked to several friends who are making the trip. They're bringing their son for a father-son trip, for instance, to Atlanta to see the Titans take on the Falcons. If you're going to be in town Saturday night, swing by Buckhead Saloon Saturday evening. Titans Radio will be there. Javon Kearse will be there
yes,
as well.
I love that.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And you can maybe possibly hear Matt give a speech. I haven't been told that's going to happen one way or the other, but chances are if there's a microphone, it's going to be placed in his hand, well, whether or not he wants it or not.
Let's just say this. The speech a couple of years ago that a few people have seen already on
– Just a few.
And a few that were there, that was a playoff speech, okay? So I promise you this, I will be there.
Okay.
Playoff-level speech versus week four could be different, but – Coach will be there either way.
You got it. You got to just keep your powder dry until the time's right.
Mac, thank you.
Thanks, guys. It's great. Hey, Paul, get well soon, man.